Welcome once again to New City Church. It's always good to catch up on Friday. One of the things we've been learning over the last few months is that as followers of Jesus, He influences and transforms every single area of our life for the better. Every single area. There's absolutely no exception. And our sexuality is very much, is a very important part of our lives. It's a very important part of who we are, right? And when we become followers of Jesus, He influences our sexuality. He transforms our sexuality for the better as much as any other area of our life. And that's really what we're going to be looking at today. I was driving into church last Friday. Sinu was there in our car. We had Varun and Varsha. We were having a conversation. And so I told Sinu, hey, Sinu, next Friday, the sermon is on the topic of sex. And we kind of talked about a little bit and we came to church. And most of you know, I have an 11-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter. Both of them were in the car and I didn't give it a second thought. My son and I have had a couple of conversations about sex. You know, we talk about sex, I mean, not the details, but you know, we're comfortable talking about sex with a daughter, in that sense. So we didn't give it a second thought. So we came to church, we were setting up, all that was going on. Tarika walked in, and Varsha, my 7-year daughter, walked up to Tarika. Says, Tarika, do you know what my daddy's going to talk about today? Tarika says, no, I don't know. And Varsha says, he's going to be talking about sex. And Tarika's wondering, what's happening? Yeah, and those of you who know my daughter, she loves asking questions. And there's always a follow-up question. And so she looks at Tarika, do you know what sex is? And Tarika is getting more nervous. The third follow-up question, can you tell me what sex is? And by then, Tarika had to kind of, you know, find a wriggle out of the situation. And she came and, you know, recounted the entire thing to Aji and we had a good laugh. So I don't want any of you to face any more awkward questions from my daughter. So we've left my son and daughter elsewhere. We'll pick them up after service. And my son, who's 11, we've had a couple of conversations about sex. And so he made a special request. He said, Dad, please record the sermon. And when I turn 13, let me listen to it. Right? So I don't think we can wait till he's 13. Right? I'll probably have a conversation with him much before that, as we've had several before. Okay, so we're going to look at a portion of the Bible today. I'm going to bring that text up. Let's read that. I'm going to be spending a lot of time on that portion. This is from a book called Proverbs. All of us know what Proverbs are. Some names of books in the Bible are very difficult to pronounce and understand. This is an easy one, Proverbs. We all know what Proverbs is. Proverbs might seem like a set of rules, but Jesus and His message of grace is hidden even in the book of Proverbs. So let's look at the text for today. Can I request someone, Abhishek, to read this out for us?
Proverbs 5:15-23. Verse 15. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares? Let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed. May you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer. May her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be intoxicated with her love. Why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? For your ways are in full view of the Lord, and He examines all your paths. The evil deeds of the wicked ensnare them. The cords of his sins hold them fast. For lack of discipline, they will die, led astray by their own great fault.
So that's we're going to be coming back to this text quite frequently in the next 30 minutes or so. But let me give you a sense of what we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at, the world has many notions about sex. But we can broadly put all those notions into two broad baskets. And both of those are wrong. So we're going to be looking at the two wrong notions about sex. And we're going to be looking at the third right notion about sex. And then at the end of it, we're going to be tackling some difficult, tricky, but very practical challenges. And then we'll close. At the end of it, we're going to sing a couple of songs, maybe have a time of introspection, and I pray you'll be inspired to surrender our sexuality to the Lordship of Jesus. So that's the plan today. So first, let's talk about the two wrong notions of sex. The first wrong notion about sex is that sex is just a physical appetite. That's the first wrong notion of sex. Sex is just a physical appetite. I think most of us, at some point of time or the other, we do tend to believe in this worldview about sex. And if we believe in this worldview about sex, if sex is just an appetite, I think it's absolutely legitimate to satisfy that appetite. Right? When you're hungry, you eat. When you're thirsty, you drink. I'm debating the choice of words to use now. I'll go for the safer version. When you feel aroused, you have sex. So what's the big deal? That's if you have a worldview that sex is just an appetite, that's how our behavior is likely to be. So when I grew up in a very orthodox Hindu Brahmin family where you never talk about sex, right? But we have our ways, yeah, right? And so a lot of my friends gave me a lot of, absolutely wrong kind of sex education. And I grew up with this notion that sex is an appetite, right? If you're thirsty, you have a drink. If you feel aroused, well, you have sex. Now, in my teens, when I hit my teens, I was hungry a lot, so there was a lot of food to eat. I was thirsty a lot, there was lots of water to drink, lots of juices to drink. I was also aroused a lot, but there was no sex available. Yeah? This is when I was in my teens. And I saw, the internet wasn't really happening then, but you still have plenty of pornography around. And I thought it was absolutely fine. You know, I still remember an incident a few weeks after I became a follower of Christ. A few of my friends who were also followers of Christ came to my home. There was no one at home, so I very proudly showed off my porn collection to them. And you should have seen their faces, right? And then they told me, "Hey, Anand, I don't think this is right." I said, "What do you mean? This is an appetite, right? I mean, come on, grow up, man. Which, you're not in the medieval world, right? So what's wrong?" That was how my attitude. That was my worldview of sex. The problem with this is if I believe that sex is just an appetite, I can never be satisfied. And I speak as someone who struggled with pornography for many years. I tell you, the sense of loneliness, the sense of unfulfillment that you experience after that momentary pleasure is so deep. I speak as someone who's believed it's an appetite, but never been satisfied by that appetite, you know. And so in some ways, if you feel sex is just an appetite and you want to, you know, fulfill that appetite in 1,000 places, it's somewhat like drinking drainage water when you're thirsty. Yeah? This verse kind of starts off, gives us a good, this verse challenges the notion that sex is just an appetite. It says drink, by all means drink, but drink from your own cistern, running water from your own well. This refers to marriage. And the way the Bible looks at sex is, it doesn't look at sex as just an appetite. It dismisses the notion that sex is just an appetite. And it says, this sex is to be enjoyed only within the boundaries of marriage. It says, if you drink in 1,000 places, you are never going to be satisfied. But if you drink from your own well, if you drink from your marriage, that's where you're going to find deep fulfillment from sex. And we're going to unpack that a little bit more as we go along. That's the first wrong notion of sex, that sex is just an appetite. The second wrong notion about sex is that if you become a follower of Jesus, that's it. You know, you have to become holy and, you know, you can't think about sex. Of course you have sex, but that's for making babies. After that, you know, what are you saying, you know? So I'll tell you something. You know, my most disappointing moment as a follower of Jesus came And someone told me, I still haven't forgiven for telling him for telling me this. And someone told me there's no sex in heaven. I said, give me a break. First he said, you know, if you're a follower of Jesus, pornography and being a follower of Jesus are not compatible. And then says, and he says, you know, and I was, you know, I began to understand that if I believe in Jesus, I'll go to heaven, I'm going to enjoy, you know, spend eternity in heaven. This guy tells me, there's no sex in heaven. I said, but that was my whole idea of heaven. You're telling me no sex in heaven. Give me a, I just, you know, I'm not exaggerating, I'm not joking. At that moment, for a 19-year-old, it is a big deal. The fact that there's no sex in heaven is a big deal. And now, if some of you are disappointed, yeah, there's something better, right? So, I hope I'm not passing on the blessing, you know. I hope I haven't disappointed anyone. So, some of us tend to think that the Bible is a medieval book. You know, it talks about, it doesn't talk about, you never hear a sermon about sex in most churches, right? Yeah, I don't know how many of us would have heard a sermon on sex in any church. And so we tend to think that, well, you know, to become a follower, I can kiss a good sex life goodbye. That's a second notion. Some of us do tend, I'm going to really shock you out of that notion, right? In the next few minutes. Let's look at that, this verse. The first thing this verse says is a positive thing about sex. The first word is drink. That's an encouragement. That's an exhortation. It says, drink. Drink. But drink from your own well. And then it goes on to talk about in fairly explicit words. I was thinking some of you might giggle. When this verse talks about, may the breasts of your wife satisfy you always. Now, how much more, this is the Bible, guys. This is not some random proverb. This is from the Bible. It says, may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. So this means, is even when you grow old, have a great sex life. And enjoy the breast of the wife of your youth always. That's unashamed. That's not prudish. That's not shy. And if that's strange, let me point something out to you. Who's saying, this is not some author writing a gentle book about sex. This is a father instructing his son. It says, son. So, my father never told me to enjoy the breast of the wife of my youth. I can assure you that. Yeah? But here a father is instructing his son to have a great sex life in your marriage. That's how the Bible, that's the Bible's view of sex. You haven't heard me finish yet, so don't rush into any conclusions. I just want to tell you, I just want to make the point that the Bible is not prudish. If some of you think the Bible is a medieval book, I want to just break that notion, right? So let's look at a piece of erotica now. That's also from the Bible. That's in the middle of the Bible, there is a book called Song of Songs. And it's a piece of erotica. It's literal in the sense, much of the book is about a wife celebrating sexual love with her husband. I think celebrating sexual love is one. In much of that book, the wife is the initiator of having sex with her husband. She is the aggressor. She is the more aggressive one in that sexual relationship between the husband and the wife. So that's the literal view. The allegorical view of the book of Song of Songs, it also talks about how fierce God's love for us is. Right? So there's little, there's allegorical. Today I'm going to be talking more on the literal unpacking of this verse. So let's look at this this verse from the book called Song of Songs, chapter 5, verse 10 to 16. Can I request someone to read? Abhishek, please. No. No worries. This is censored. Yeah. Sorry.
Song of Songs, 5:10-16. My beloved is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. His head is gold. His hair is radiant, black as raven. His eyes are like doves, by the water stream washed in milk, mounted like jewels. His cheeks are like filled with spice, yielding perfume.
Okay, we get someone else to read the next slide. Anyone? Ben, would you like to read?
His lips are like lilies, dripping with myrrh. His arms are like rods of gold, set with copper. His body is like polished ivory, decorated with lapis lazuli. His legs are pillars of marble, set on bases of pure gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as it said, cedar. His mouth is sweetness itself, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, this is my friend, daughter of Jesus.
This is the wife describing a husband. She starts with his head pure as gold, his hair is wavy, black as raven. He's obviously not a blonde. His eyes are like doves by the water streams, mounted like jewels. She goes on to describe her cheeks, his cheeks. She goes on to very vividly describe his lips. She knows exactly what his lips feel like. She talks about his arms. She says that his body is like polished ivory. He goes on to describe his legs and so on and so forth. I want to ask, just pause here. I'm going to ask you one question. When the wife is describing the body of her husband as polished ivory, seriously think that's what she's talking about? No. Look at the progression. Right? Arms and then legs. And then she talks about in the middle, she talks about her body. She says, his body is like polished ivory decorated with lapis lazuli. What I have put up is a very decent translation of the original Bible. Because no one would have the guts to translate the real version. But I have the real version for us and I want to share that. Yeah? So when the wife talks and looks at her husband and says, your body is like polished ivory, she is not talking about his body. She is vividly, poetically describing her husband's penis in its sexually aroused, fully erect state. That is the literal transaction. This translation. This is a book called God's Rediscovering God's Design for Marriage and Becoming Soulmates for Life. I'm going to read a quote from that book. Most English translations hesitate in this verse. The Hebrew is quite erotic. And most translators cannot bring themselves to bring out the obvious meaning that the ivory tusk, the polished ivory tusk, is the erect male penis. This again is a prelude to lovemaking. This is foreplay. There is no shy, no shamed mechanical movement under the sheets. Rather, they stand before each other, naked, aroused, feeling no shame, but only joy in each other's sexuality. There is no shyness, there is no prudishness when the Bible talks about sex between a husband and a wife. Drink from your own well. This clearly proves that the Bible does not consider sex as dirty or non-essential. The Bible does not make you feel guilty about sexual desires being fulfilled between husband and wife. Rather, it celebrates sexual desire within marriage. I'll tell you, this woman is more liberated than the most liberated of 21st century women. The way she enjoys her sexuality with her husband. Sex is not man's idea. Sex is God's idea. Right? I was listening to the wife of a pastor speak on sexuality. And she talked about how as a 12-year-old, she first discovered masturbation. And she was shocked. She thought for quite some time that she had invented something new. Yeah, but human beings did not invent sex. Sex was invented by God himself. It is, sex is God's idea. Let me just pull out a couple of books from the creation account that's described in the book of Genesis from the Bible. I'm going to read the first verse. God created them male and female and blessed them. When it says God created them male and female, implicit in it is God designed the male and female sexual organs and bestowed upon man and woman to come together as husband and wife and enjoy the beauty of sexual love between each other. I would even go to the extent of saying that God designed the male and the female orgasm. It is a creation of God. The Bible is not shy at all about sex. Let me just ask you one thing. You know, it's a bit of a sidetrack, but let me just make that point. I'll quickly come back. Do you seriously believe that something as beautiful, as exquisite as the male and female orgasm could be the product of accidental evolution over millions of years? Do you seriously believe that something as exquisitely beautiful as the orgasm could just be, you know, some chemicals came together, some life happened, that life, you know, that's, that molecules evolved, became something. I mean, are you intellectually so naive to believe that in evolution, right? To me, human sexuality is one of the greatest proofs of the existence of a creator God. To me, every orgasm is one of the many beautiful reminders of the glorious, incredibly creative God who created all of the of the universe. That's God creating sex for you. I'm going to just spend a little bit of time on the second verse that's up there. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds. So essentially God is telling Adam and Eve, the first husband and wife, be fruitful and increase in number. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this verse to break the notion that sex between husband and wife is all about making babies. There's more to sex than just making babies. So this verse, God calls Adam and Eve, and he tells Adam and Eve, go forth, be fruitful, and increase in number. Now, what do you have to do to increase in number? You have to have sex. So God's telling Adam and Eve, fill the earth. And God's telling Adam and Eve, have so much sex that you and your descendants, and your descendants should have so much sex between husband and wife that you will fill the earth with children. Now that's, I want you to park this here. This is God's command. This is God creating sexuality. And then, having given this command, what kind of pregnancy odds does God create in man and woman, in husband and wife? Right? Statistically, and I'm going to do a quick biology lesson. We all know that the human body produces millions of sperms. We also know that the female ovary produces eggs. I think one egg a month, I've forgotten my biology, or two eggs a month, or the two ovaries alternate. Net, there are millions of sperms chasing one egg. And this egg is available for fertilization for a period of 8 days. And in those 8 days, it's actually for a period of 2 days that fertilization is really possible. And even in those 2 days, the odds of pregnancy are pretty stiff. Statistically speaking, a husband and a wife have to have sexual intercourse for 100 times to have a 3% probability of making a baby. That's also a fact. That's the way God's wired men and women. So here God is saying, be fruitful and multiply. And God creates such stiff odds for pregnancy. What is God trying to do? God's just trying to make sure that, you know, when two dogs have sex, they have a baby. Not one, 12. Yeah? If God's sole intention of sex was to fill the earth, he could have wired us one intercourse between a husband and a wife and 24 kids. Yeah, it would be a factory. But that's not the way God designed. God ensured, I know couples for whom making a baby is hard work. Yeah? So you have to have, if you doctors will advise you, okay, this is the time where the chances of pregnancy, make sure you make love tonight. Or in these dates, right? So a lot of couples really have to work hard at having sex to make sure they make a baby. Look at the way God's wired us sexually. I think the Bible destroys the notion that sex is only meant for babies. And a husband and wife, they have, especially followers of Jesus, holy people, right, can't enjoy sex. No, the Bible tells, the Bible's ethic on sex is very simple. Within marriage, go for it, baby. Just go for it. Outside of marriage, don't even think about it. Right? Sex is not an appetite. The Bible, neither is the Bible prudish about sex. Let me quickly pause and recap to what we've seen. I think the first point I made is that the Bible's view of sex is not permissive. It's not a sleep around, you know, have sex when you feel aroused kind of an ethic. That's, the Bible says that's not what sex is. The Bible also says, I think if this hasn't convinced you that the Bible isn't prudish, I can do more. I know what the lapis lazuli means. I know my wife warned me. He said, you're already crossing the line. Hold back, right? So if you're still not convinced, let me know. We'll have a conversation. Men with men, women with women. I'll unpack that passage some more for you. Right? Neither is the Bible permissive about sex. Neither is the Bible prudish about sex. Both, the Bible demolishes both these arguments of sex, notions of sex. The Bible says there is a third way. There is a third way. I want to say that the gospel view of sex is the third way. What is the gospel view of sex? Simply put, the gospel view of sex, and I'll explain that, I'll explain what the gospel is and what the gospel view of sex, but simply put, the Bible says sex is not at all about sex, about self-gratification, but sex in between husband and wife is all about radical self-donation. Bible's view of sex, sex is not permissive, not prudish. Sex is not self-gratification, but sex between husband and wife is all about radical self-donation. I want to read a verse for us from a book called Ephesians, which is in the New Testament. It's written by a person called Paul, which talks about... Did the computer get embarrassed with what I was saying? So, can someone read this for me? Ben?
Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing of water to the world, and to present her to himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other thing, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated their own body, but they feed and care for their body, just as Christ does the church. For we are all members, we are members of it. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you must also love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her.
So when the Bible here talks about for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife and the two will become one flesh, it is also talking about sexual union between husband and wife. It's not talking only about sexual union. Becoming one flesh includes sexual union, but it also includes emotional union, it also includes spiritual union, it also includes financial union, it includes absolute total vulnerability towards to one another. So that's what the Bible refers to. But it also includes sexual union. Now, having said that, so in this definition it also includes sexual union, I want us to just trace the pattern of these verses. It starts off talking about husbands, love your wives, and that love your wives, we've just seen, sex is a big part of loving your wives, and vice versa, sex is a big part of wives loving their husbands. So it says, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church. So straight off, this passage is comparing the love between a husband and wife, all kinds of love, including sexual love, to the love between Christ and his church. And then it goes on to talk about marriage. And then it comes back, it talks about sexual union. And then it says, this is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and church and the church. So this passage, this text, is splitting between sexuality between husband and wife, and between the love Christ has for His church, which is all of us. And this flitting is quite unnerving, right? Now, this is a profound mystery. I feel totally inadequate to explain or unpack this for you. I'm going to try, but let me promise you what I'm going to explain will be totally inadequate, because this is a profound mystery. And if I were to be able to explain it, it wouldn't be a mystery. I'm going to try and explain it. How did Christ love His church, which is all of us? Christ loved His church by radically self-donating Himself on the cross. Right? What? Let me unpack this radical self-donation that Christ did. Essentially, Christ said, you know, we sung the third song, right? If you remember holiness. For some of us who are here for the first time, the word holiness might be a little strange to you. You know, maybe it's not really in your paradigm. So let me just explain it very simply. You know, I said this a few weeks ago, and please allow me to repeat it. Next time I'll come up with a different, better, newer illustration. If you're getting ready for a marriage, if you're a woman, getting ready for a marriage, you're fully dressed up, you're very happy with the way you look, you apply a lipstick, and there's a little bit of a smudge of your lipstick on your upper lip. How many of you will be disappointed with that? How many of you will make sure you remove that? You're perfect everywhere else. You're looking perfect, gorgeous, just that smudge. You're not going to be happy with that smudge. You're going to wipe that smudge off before you go attend the wedding. You want perfection. Similarly, if you want perfection, how is God a million times better than you and I want perfection? And God's, you desire for perfection, I desire for perfection, and God's desire for perfection is holiness. Just like you would never go to the wedding with a smudge on your upper lip, looking a little bit like Hitler and his mustache. God would never have a relationship with anyone with a stain that's far worse than the stain of lipstick that will just refuse to go away. And that is the stain of sin. Anything wicked we do. And so how did God enter into a relationship with us? He said, the stain has to go away, otherwise I can't relate to these people. He looked at his son, would you take that stain upon yourself? And Jesus said, yes, Father, I will. And Jesus came down, lived a perfect life. He was offered all kinds of stain, and He overcame every one of them. Not a single speck of dirt stuck to His body. Nothing ever came near Him. He was fully perfect. He was absolutely holy, pleasing to God. And all of us were totally imperfect, utterly unholy. And Jesus said, I've lived a perfect life. Now the blessing of this perfect life, and this perfect life, I want to take it away from myself and I want to give it to them. And all of their sins, I want to take it upon myself. And He went to the cross. And He was sure He was crucified by the Roman soldiers. Sure He was beaten to death by the Roman soldiers. But at the cross, it was the wrath of God, the fury of God, not on Jesus, but upon our sins He had taken upon Himself, that bore down on Christ and killed Him. And He rose again from it. That is radical self-donation. And the Bible says, sexual love between a husband and wife is not about self-gratification. It's about radical self-donation. So when God designed husband and wife to have a great sex life, it's not just for their pleasure. His plan for sexuality was when the husband radically self-donates himself to his wife, and when his wife joyfully, freely, willingly, shamelessly, abundantly self-donates herself to her husband, in the self-donation to each other, they will experience a feeble hint of the beautiful self-donating love of Jesus Christ for us. Sex, my friends, was designed by God for us to experience gospel love in a way we can never experience. That is the gospel. That's the third view of sex. The view that sex is, you know, permissive, You know, you think that's a fanciful view of sex. Some of us might think that. I say that's too low view of sex. This is a high view of sex. You know, you might look at followers of Christ, they are prudes, they don't have a great sex life. Excuse me, you got it all wrong. Yeah? That sleeping around is a low view of sex. You know, sorry, I got carried away. That's too low view of sex. You know, I must be careful on what I say. Yeah? But this gospel view is a very high view of sex. Yeah? I want to leave us with that thought. Now I'm going to get down to some very practical application. I hope I don't shock you. I hope I don't shock myself with what I'm going to say. But I'm going to deal with a few tricky issues. After we deal with a few tricky issues, I'm going to lead us in a time of surrendering our sexuality to Christ. I don't know how many of you have ever prayed for a great sex life. Yeah? That's what we're going to do. A great sex life as God intended, not as you and I think about it. We're going to have some more worship, some beautiful songs. We picked a couple of songs, and it's really worked when Roshni and Abhishek worked hard in practicing those songs. I pray God will use those songs to help us see the beauty of Jesus' love for us. I'm going to talk about three practical problems. But before that, I want to just spend a couple of minutes on what I think is an extremely important thing. Every time I talk about marriage or sexuality, I make it a point to put this right up front. I think singlehood is as sexy as marriage. The Bible says singlehood is as sexy as marriage. Yeah? Some of us, God will call to be single. Some of us, God will call to be single for a season. Yeah? But the way, all cultures, whether you're talking about New York in 2013 or you're talking about medieval Rome, attach a certain significance to marriage. You're incomplete. You know, either you're not married to someone or you're not sleeping with someone. You don't have a sexual partner. You're incomplete. That's the way the world looks at it. I think, especially if you're a woman, if you're not married in many culture, if you're a woman, you're not married, society prompts on you, not the Bible. The Bible celebrates singlehood as much as it celebrates marriage. Truth is, it says singlehood is better than marriage. Yeah. So I want, if you're single, if you've chosen to be single, but if you're single not by choice, but by a season that God has brought into your life, celebrate that. I don't want you to listen to the sermon on sex and marriage and go away thinking singlehood is not sexy. No, singlehood is as sexy as being married. Right. We're going to look at three practical issues. I'm going to talk about masturbation, I'm going to talk about pornography, and I'm going to talk about sex outside marriage. I'm going to be as frank, as honest as I can. But as I unpack these issues, I want you to think of this three-point paradigm that we talked about. The Bible's view of sex is not permissive, the Bible's view of sex is not prudish, but the Bible's view of sex is not self-gratification, but radical self-donation. Right? Let me start about masturbation. What does the Bible say about masturbation? Absolutely nothing. There's no explicit mention. Some people say there's this guy in the Old Testament called Onan. I don't even know if I pronounce his name right. He had sexual intercourse, but he did what is called as coitus interruptus. He didn't ejaculate within, you know, inside his wife's womb, so he ejaculated outside because he didn't want to give her a baby. So that refers, no, that does not refer to masturbation. Clearly there's sexual intercourse in progress, right? That's not. So Bible is not explicit about masturbation. The Bible is absolutely explicit about every other form of sexual behavior. Homosexuality, men having sex with animals, animals having sex, bestiality, everything the Bible is absolutely explicit about. Clearly mentions the Bible is silent about masturbation. Now, I want to talk about the issue of masturbation through these three paradigms. A permissive view of masturbation will say, well, it is part of growing up. All of us are sexual beings. Well, as we grow up, all of us, without exception, have explored our bodies, right? And have found that certain parts of bodies provide different kind of sensations, and we've grown in our understanding and exploring of those sensations. Some of us have really graduated to understanding and experiencing all of those pleasures in every single way. That's a permissive The legalistic or prudish view is, didn't they teach you the 11th commandment in Sunday school? Thou shalt not masturbate. That's a legal. Now, I'm not going to take either of those views, but I'm going to talk about the gospel view. We saw God's amazingly beautiful design of sexuality. And sex is all about self-donation of the husband and the wife. Sex is not about self-gratification. So masturbation, sadly for me, is not compatible with radical self-donation. Yeah? But I don't want anyone to feel guilty, condemned, you know, dirty. That's not the intention at all. Let me put sexual sin in proper perspective. Can you tell me what's the difference between lust and gluttony? Tell me which is the bigger sin, lust or gluttony in God's eyes? Lust is an inordinate desire for sex. Gluttony is an inordinate desire for food. Now, a man who's or a woman who is lusting desires sex more than God. A man or a woman who's a glutton desires food more than God. Now, some of us love coffee more than God. We abuse our bodies by drinking too much coffee. Now, that's as big a sin as sexual sin. Right? Christians do tend to take a very self-righteous view. No, I don't look at pornography, so I'm better than others. But I'm selfish, I'm greedy, I'm self-centered, I struggle with envy, I struggle with greed. Those are no lesser sins, and those are no greater. In God's eyes, there is no hierarchy of sins. Right? So that's a proper context. Now, sexual sin is not the only struggle we have. There are thousands of other sins we do every single moment in our life. So let's get it in proper perspective. So, I'm not going to force this. This is not the view of the church. That's not what I'm saying. But I want you to consider, if you believe in this view of sex, would you consider this view that masturbation is about self-gratification, but sex, as God intended, is all about self-donation. Now, I wish I could go down and discuss this in greater detail. My wife is staring at me already. But man on man, woman on woman, I can talk to you more. Right? There are exceptions. Yeah? I don't want to get into that level of detail here, but we can talk about it. I can give you some great material you can read. Man on man, woman on woman. Okay? Right. That's masturbation. Let me talk about pornography. Pornography is a simple manifestation of the worldview that sex is just an appetite. If I feel sex is just an appetite, well, these days porn is available everywhere. It's there on your mobile, it's there on your laptop, it's there on television, it's there everywhere. You have absolutely free. So if you think sex is just an appetite, well, you are, I am. If I think sex is just an appetite, I'm going to go and just satiate that appetite. So pornography is there everywhere. We've discussed and agreed that that's a wrong view of sex. Pornography starts off, not always, but often, when a man or a woman is not willing to wait for marriage to enjoy sexual intimacy with his husband and wife. That's not always the case, right? I've struggled with pornography after I've gotten married. I want to be absolutely honest in admitting my sins. So I don't want, you know, I want to be absolutely honest about it. But it's by the grace of God, you know, as I understood this view of sexuality, that by the grace of God, by the strength of God, I've been able to overcome that. Right? So let me put it this way. I will tell you, you wait for 2 weeks, I'll give you a bottle of champagne. Right? Now please don't take this as any endorsement or disendorsement of alcohol. I'm just using this as an illustration. We'll talk, have another chat about alcohol later. Right? So I'm going to tell you, if you wait for 2 weeks, I'll give you a bottle of the best champagne in the world. Right? Sex is only better than the best champagne in the world. But you say, you know what, I'm thirsty. I have the option of drinking drainage water every day till I drink champagne. Or I have the option of waiting. No, I'm going to drink drainage water. I can't wait for the champagne. Champagne is 2 weeks down the line, but let me drink this water from the gutter. Yeah? To indulge in pornography is like that. Once you've acquired a taste for drainage water, you know, after time, it actually tastes better than champagne. Yeah, that's what pornography does to you. I'm not exaggerating. The moment you've allowed your eyes and your mind and your sexuality to feast on pornography, you're never going to look at your wife or husband, you're never going to look at your spouse as anything other than a sexual object. Your spouse, your wife, and your husband, or your husband, will never match up to the images you see in abundant numbers on pornography. You know, we start indulging in pornography because we want great sex. You know what? Pornography. There's nothing that screws up your sex life more than pornography. I can say this by experience. There is nothing which robs intimacy. There's nothing which makes you feel more dirty than pornography. Right? That's that's on pornography. Sex outside of marriage. I'll close with this. We'll have a time of worship after that. I've really struggled with this. I'll be very honest. This is one more challenge area in being a follower of Jesus. Let's say I'm still single. Let's say I'm single. Right? I'm not. I'm happily married. Yeah, just for the sake of illustration, right? I'm single and I fall in love with a woman and we are so in love with each other. You know, so in love with each other. And we would die for each other. And we will do anything for each other. We are absolutely sure next year we're going to get married. And we will honor God in our marriage by getting married in a church and all of that. So if I'm so in love with her and I committed myself to her, no? In that sense. Why can't I have sex with her? I'm talking about followers of Christ. Why not? What's wrong with it? Right? I mean, you have to go through that ritual, just that ritual to have sex. Why can't you have sex? What's wrong? I'm absolutely sure I'm going to get married. Let me try and answer this question because I think it is. So one of the reasons we advise couples who committed to each other, who've fallen in love, who made a decision to get married, is to not wait for too long. Because sex is beautiful. You can't hold it off. Once you committed emotional vulnerability to someone, you cannot restrain sexual vulnerability to that person. Right? So that's why we advise, encourage couples to get married soon once they've made a decision. Why can't two good believers who love each other not have sex before marriage? It's very simple. You cannot have intimacy without commitment. It's not possible. You know what? God cannot have intimacy with you and I without commitment. God cannot have intimacy with us. Unless God made the commitment of sending His Son Jesus to die on the cross for us, apart from the commitment of giving up His Son Jesus as a sacrifice for our sins, apart from that commitment, God cannot enjoy an intimacy with us. And since marriage and sexuality reflects that love between Christ and His church, as we come under the spiritual covenant of marriage, then God gives us the abundance of sexuality. I think that's why sex, apart from marriage, no matter how much you love each other, is not allowed in the Bible. I know in the culture we live in, the very permissive culture we live in, sexual temptation is very strong. You know, I struggle with it every day. My glance tends to linger a second longer than it ought to. I struggle with it. It's not that I have overcome temptation, but every time I am tempted sexually, I think of a love that is more beautiful. I think of a love that is stronger than even death itself. We're going to sing a couple of songs celebrating that love Jesus has for us. And as we do that, before we sing, I'll ask Ben and Abhishek to get ready, get the things ready for the song. I want to just give us a moment of introspection. If you're single, I'd like you to pray for your spouse, who, you know, as and when God, you know, brings marriage into your life. Maybe God has called you to be single. Maybe you feel that call, or at least for a season God has called you to be single. Ask God to help you enjoy singlehood. If you're married, your sex life is not really great for whatever reason. Boy, I hope you do some good work to it. Yeah? So I think the Bible doesn't give you an option. The Bible really encourages you to have a great sex life. I want to, even if you're married, I want you to surrender. I'm going to just stop with just one thing. I gave that wet blanket. I threw that wet blanket by saying there is no sex in heaven. I want to tell you, there is something better than sex in heaven. There is something a million times better than sex in heaven. And that's what this verse was also referring to. Our union as the bride of Christ, with Christ himself. I can assure you, sex will look like a lollipop in the face of a chocolate factory. Let's pause, have a time of introspection, and that's going to lead us a time of worship after that. You may want to close your eyes. Someone can get the song ready. You may want to close your eyes. You may want to make a visible sign. You may want to place your hand on your heart. You may want to stay in a posture of surrender. You may want to stand up. You may want to kneel down. Feel free. You know, be yourself. Do what you feel is natural. Respond to God in a way that you feel natural for you to do. You may never have prayed in your life before. And if you don't know what you do, what prayer is, and what all this is about, just be still and just say, God, help me navigate this. I know I've been this way, but just help me navigate this. I believe God will help you. Just a moment silence for us to introspect. Think about what our sexual ethic. Are we really happy with our current worldview of sex? Can Jesus really give us something better? You want to explore Jesus? You want to think about him more? You want to give it a shot? Give him a shot? I hope you fall in love with Jesus today as we sing these songs.